The eighth parak deals with a human bechor, so it's a firstborn son, and this has two halachic, major halachic ramifications. Number one is that when you have a bechor, the bechor receives two times the amount of the Yerusha. So what that means is if there are a number of sons to a father, the bechor, the firstborn son, is going to receive a double portion. So that is halacha number one, or we'll call it type of bechor number one. And the second halacha is as follows, that when you have a bechor, there is also a pidyon haben, which means that that bechor, that son, has to be redeemed from the Kohen for five Sla'im. Now, in fact, this is going to be very critical for our Mishnah, and actually the next Mishnah as well. There are going to be different triggers in order to cause somebody or enable somebody to be a Bechor. We have two types of Bechor. There's a Bechor Linachala, which means a Bechor for an inheritance. That's the Bechor that gets the double portion. And there's also a Bechor to the Kohen, or the Pidyon HaBen. We call it Bechor LeKohen, which means that that Bechor has to be redeemed with the Pidyon HaBen. And the triggers are different as follows. And this is all by way of critical background to understand our Mishnah. A Bechor Linachala, the first type of Bechor, that's the Bechor that gets the double portion of the inheritance. We look at the Bechor of the father. If the father has had a Bechor before, then this child, even, for example, he had a Bechor from a different wife, now he has a second wife, it would not be from the second wife, even if it's her firstborn child, it doesn't matter. We look at the father. The first Bechor for the father will get the double portion. And this is actually based on a pasuk. It says reishiso no, and the drush is as follows: when you have a viable son that is born to the father, that is the one that is going to get the double portion. The drush of Chazal is lev aviv davalav. If you have a child that the father would mourn over if he lost that child, that is the child that is the bechor. And the ramification for that is, for example, there was a miscarriage. And we will talk about various ramifications in this mission. If there's a miscarriage first, and then thereafterward a child is born, let's assume the second one always has to be a boy. The one that was a bechor always has to be a boy. But the first one, you don't know. Either way, there was a miscarriage of some sort, and then there was a bechor, a boy that was born there afterward. Because the father would not mourn over the first one because it was a miscarriage, the second one will be a bechor linachala. So that's absolutely critical when we talk about a bechor linachala for getting a double portion. We are going after the father. It's the father's quote-unquote firstborn, but it has to be such that it is a firstborn that the father would mourn over this child and not a prior event that happened when he had a different quote-unquote child. It wasn't actually a child, it was a miscarriage, etc. That is not something he would mourn on. Accordingly, the second one, even though it's a second one, but it's the first one he would mourn over, that's going to be the Bechor Linachala. That's the trigger when it comes to the father. When it comes to the Bechor Linachala is the father. When it comes to the Bechor LeKohen, if there's a Pidyon HaBen, we don't look at it, is this the first born, the Bechor for the father, but is this the Peter Rechem for the mother? Is this literally the first thing that would open the womb of the mother? For example, if she had another child already, then certainly the second one, even if it's from a different husband, would not be her Peter Rechem, and there would be no Pidyon HaBen. But even certain events that happened before that, for example, various types of miscarriages, would also be considered an opening of the womb, such that even if it was a miscarriage and then she had a baby boy afterward, there would be no Pidyon HaBen, because that baby boy thereafterward is not a Peter Rechem. So we're going to start out with the topic sentence in this Mishnah Aleph, and then we will go into significant detail. This is a fairly long and complicated Mishnah. So the Mishnah starts out as follows: Yesh Bechor Lenachala. There is a Bechor that would be a Bechor for purposes of Nachala, getting a double portion, Ve'eno Bechor LeKohen, but would not require a Pidyon HaBen. And category number two is a Bechor LeKohen, Ve'eno Bechor LeNachala. This is the reverse. There is going to be a certain circumstance that somebody, a child, a baby boy, would be a Bechor requiring a Pidyon HaBen. That's a Bechor LeKohen, Ve'eno Bechor LeNachala. However, that same baby would not be a Bechor for purposes of inheritance, so would not get a double portion. And category number three is a Bechor leNachala leKohen. There are certain Bechors that are going to be a Bechor for both purposes, Nachala and a Kohen, getting a double portion, and it would be a required Pidyon HaBen. Then number four, category number four, Yesh Sheino Bechor lo leNachala velo leKohen. There are situations that a Bechor is going to be a Bechor, but for neither of those, it's not going to receive a double portion, and there's going to be no Pidyon HaBen. And now we're going to go through category number one. We'll cover three of the categories in this Mishnah, and then the fourth category will be in the next Mishnah. And the first of the categories is going to be the most complicated. It's going to be Ezehu Bechor leNachala ve'enu Bechor leKohen. So what are we talking about? Give us different examples of when we would have a Bechor that would receive a double portion because it is a Bechor for the father. However, it would not be a Bechor leKohen because it's not going to be a Keter Rechem for the mother. Accordingly, there would be no required pidyon of that Bechor. There would be no required redemption, pidyon haben, for that child. So it goes as follows. Situation number one, before we read it inside, is that we have twins. The mother is bearing twins. And number one is what is called a nafel. It's a preborn, premature baby that unfortunately did not survive in the end of the day. But what happened is as follows. Haba achar hanefalim shiyatza rosho chai. So baby number one, which is the premature baby that did not live in the end of the day, but that baby stuck out its head first. So before the second one, which is the one that survived, was born, the first one, which did not survive, while it was alive, it stuck its head out, it went back in, and then the second one was born, and the first one that had stuck its head out did not survive. So this is situation number one, and we'll walk through it as follows. When it comes to a Bechor leKohen, this, the second one was the born that survived, this one was not the Peter Rechem because the first one stuck its head out. That's the premature baby that did not survive, stuck its head out. That was the Peter Rechem of the mother. That's the one that basically broke the womb, opened up the womb. And accordingly, there's going to be no Pidyon HaBen for that one because it did not survive. And the second one there afterward is not the Peter Rechem of the mother. And accordingly, there is going to be no Pidyon HaBen. On the other hand, that second one that was born, the first one stuck its head out, the second one was survived, that second one is going to be the reshis ono of the father. In other words, the father is not going to mourn over the first one. It passed away. It was a preemie, passed away, did not survive. The father will not mourn over that. But the second one that was born, that survived, that would be the bechor of the father. And that's why that one will receive a double portion of Yerusha. So accordingly, this is our first situation that we have a Bechor leNachala, because it goes by the father. This is the Reshis Ono, the father. The father would mourn over that child. But on the other hand, that child, that one that survived, because his brother, his twin, stuck its head out first, it was the first one that was a Peter Rechem. The second one was not a Peter Rechem. And accordingly, the second one would require no Pidyon HaBen. Continuing, next example in this first category of where do we have a Bechor leNachala and not a Bechor leKohen is as follows, somewhat similar. We have twins in the mother, Uben Tisha Shiyata Rosho Meis. We had twins, and the first one also here was viable. The first one stuck its head out when it was alive, and it was 9 months old, so it was a viable child, but it died thereafterward. And the second one was born first. It was born first after the first one stuck its head out. So accordingly, we have the same thing going on here. This second one would not be the Peter Rechem because the first one that did not survive was the one who stuck its head out first. That's considered the opening of the womb. That's the Peter Rechem of the mother. And accordingly, the second one that's born is not going to be a Bechor leKohen. There's going to be no Pidyon HaBen. On the other hand, the first one, because it died, there's going to be no Reshis Ono for the father. We're looking at the father now for purpose of inheritance. The father's not going to mourn over that first one. It wasn't considered a Ben Kayam. It never survives. The halachic standard would be, did the child survive for 30 days after birth? This child did not. It died prior to birth or on birth. And it was the second one that survived. And accordingly, the second one is going to be the Bechor Lenachala. It's going to get a double inheritance because it's the Reshis Ono of the father. Another example, number three, situation, Bahamapeles Kemin Behema Chaya Ve'of. If the mother aborted a dead fetus, and that dead fetus, it was a fairly early stage, not the earliest stage, but it was fairly earliest stage, so it did not yet develop human features. It looks like an animal, domesticated animal, an undomesticated animal, or an ov, which is a bird, but it doesn't have human features. Divrei Rebbe Meir. That's the opinion of Rebbe Meir. Rebbe Meir is of the view that even though this fetus did not develop much, but it had some features, accordingly, when it was born, when it came out, that is going to be the peter rechem. That is going to be the peter rechem of the mother. Accordingly, whatever is born, if you have a son that's born there afterward, that's, we'll call it the second born son, is not going to be a bechor lekohen. There's going to be no pidyon haben. You have to be a peter rechem of the mother. On the other hand, when it comes to Bechor Lenachala, that's a different standard. We look at the father and we say, is this the Reshis Ono of the father? The father is not going to mourn over an embryo, that fetus that came out looking like a Behema Chaya Ve'of. Accordingly, when the second son is born, that is going to be the Reshis Ono of the father, and it's going to be a Bechor Lenachala. The Chachamim Omri, Chachamim disagree on this last case. Chachamim disagree in the situation when the mother aborted a dead fetus that looked like a Behema Chaya Ve'of, that Rebbe Meir said that it is going to be, it's not going to be a Bechor Lekohen. The second one that's born is going to not require a pidyon haben. They disagree. Chachamim say this second one that is born, because it was born after such an early stage fetus, it's going to be considered a Bechor Lekohen and a Bechor Lenachal. It's going to be both types of Bechor. Not only a Bechor Lenachal, it's going to be to get a second inheritance, it's going to get double portion of inheritance. But in addition, this is going to be considered the Peter Rechem of the mother, the second one, and accordingly, there will be a required pidyon haben. And Chachamim Omrim, that there is no keter rechem. For example, in our situation where it was so early stage, it only looked like a behema chayevav, there were no human features there. Anshiye bo mitzuras adam. Until there are features of a human, it's not considered a keter rechem. And accordingly, the second one that is born after that early stage aborted fetus, that is going to be, because there were no human features on that aborted fetus. Accordingly, it is going to be a Bechor LaKohen. So what Chachamim are saying here is, it's not considered to be a Peter Rechem of the mother until Achiebo Mitzuras Adam, until that fetus has some features of a human, and at that point, what would be born afterward would not be a Peter Rechem. Okay, now we're continuing another situation, fourth situation in this first category of where do we have a Bechor Lenachala, get a double portion, but is not a Bechor LeKohen. So this is situation number four. We're going to group together number situations. In fact, Hamapeles Sandal, if the woman gave birth, not a baby, but a sandal. It was some sort of a fetus that looked like a sandal, or cilia, or amniotic sac that had no fetus inside of it. The assumption then is it had a fetus, but the fetus dissolved. So this is even according to the Shita of Chachamim, that you need some human features, but if you had something that looked like a sandal, or if you have an amniotic sac, no fetus inside, it used to have a fetus inside that would have had human features, the Shapir Mirukam. This is some sort of mass, it looks like an egg shape. It's a mass of flesh that is forming, again, certain features, human features. So Chachamim would agree that this is going to be a keter rechem. All of these, vayotzei mechutach, the fetus that came out dismembered and came out in various pieces. So all of these, even Chachamim would agree that this is a keter rechem. So when you had this mapelis, a woman that gave birth to the sandal or the amniotic sac or to the mass that came out or to limbs that came out, haba acharehen bechor lenachala ve'ena bechor lekohen. In all these situations, the second born after this fetus came out is going to be a bechor nechala. It's going to, if it's a baby boy, it will receive a double portion. That is the one that the father will mourn over. Father won't mourn over a fetus that came out at this stage that it's a sandal, etc. The Eino B'chor LeKohen, however, it is not going to be a Chor LeKohen because this fetus that came out, even though it was in the form of a sandal, Amnion, Aksak, etc., that is going to be considered the Peter Rechem of the mother. So the one that came out afterward is not a Peter Rechem, and there's going to be no Pidyon HaBen. We are continuing with other examples of this first category, that is a B'chor LeNachala, going by the father's firstborn, reishis ono, but is not a bechor to a coin, because we're looking there, was it the first peter rechem or not. So accordingly, it goes as follows. More examples of this first category. Mishalo hayulo banim menasa isha shekfar yalda. This is actually the most simple example. We are talking about a father that never had any children, so he hasn't had his bechor yet, his reishis ono yet. And he married a woman who had already given birth, so she already had her peter rechem, and if they have a baby boy first, that is going to be his reishis ono, that's going to be a bechor lenachala, getting a double portion, but is not going to be a bechor lekohen because it's not her peter rechem. Other similar examples of this, if we have a woman, oda shivcha v'nishtachrucha, she gave birth the first time when she was a Canaanite slave. So that's not a Jew. That's when she gave birth the first time. So that is still a keter rechem because she has given birth, v'nishtachrucha, and then she became freed, and now she's considered a Jew. She married a Jew, and they had their first child. So in this situation, this is a case that it is going to be a keter. She already had a peter rechem before she was set free. So because she had a peter rechem already, and now she's giving birth to a Jewish child, but it doesn't matter. The second one that's born, the Jew, is not her peter rechem, so there's no pidyon haben. On the other hand, if it's the first born boy, if the first child, and it's a boy of her husband, then it is going to be a bechor. That it's going to be a bechor lenachala to get a double portion. And similarly to that, similar to the shivcha shenishachra, if we had a woman that when she was non-Jewish, she gave birth, oda nachris, that's when she gave birth. So the second time, now she got v'nit gaira, now she has converted, she gets married, mishabat liyishol yalda, she got married to a Jew, and she gives birth now. So this is not her peter rechem, she already gave birth when she was not Jewish. So accordingly, because it's not her peter rechem when she has her baby Jewish boy, there is not going to be a pidyon haben. It's not a bechor for purposes of the coin. It's not a bechor lekoin. But if it's the father's first child, it is going to be a bechor lenachala for that child to receive a double portion. Accordingly, bechor lenachala, all these situations we mentioned, is a bechor lenachala to get a double portion, ve'eino bechor lekoin, and will not require a pidyon haben. Now, Rabbi Yossi Aglili is going to disagree with one case. He's going to disagree with the case that we had the non-Jewish woman who gave birth when she was non-Jewish, and then she converted, and she had another child from a Jew. In that situation, the Tana Kama said she already had her peter rechem, and accordingly, the second one that is born, there's no pidyon haben. Even if it's a bechor to the father, it's a bechor nechala, it is not a bechor lekohen. Rabbi Yossi Aglili Omer, he disagrees, bechor nechala v'lekohen. That second one that's born, it's her first child that is Jewish. Accordingly, it's going to be a bechor not only for nachala purposes, but also the coin to require a pidyon haben. Why? Because Rabbi Yossi Aglili, we're about to see a drush on the pasuk, he is going to only look at the child that was born to a woman when she was Jewish. But if she gave birth before she was Jewish, we are not going to consider that her peter rechem. Accordingly, the pasuk says, "Shenemar peter rechem Yisrael." When there's a peter rechem, the first opening be Yisrael. The drasha is at sheiftu rechem Yisrael, the son that opens her womb when she was a Jew. So it's only the son when she is Jewish that will be considered the peter rechem. Accordingly, that son is going to be born after the first. She had a son already when she was not Jewish, but then she converted. It's the first son that she has when she is Jewish. As long as the first child she has is a son, that is going to be a peter rechem. So there would be a pidyon haben. It is a bechor lekohen and also a bechor lenachala. That is all category number one, that we have a child that is going to be a bechor lenachala. We look at the father, is it his reishis ono, the child that he would mourn over? And in contrast, that bechor that was given birth was not the peter rechem of the mother. Accordingly, there's going to be no Bechor lekohen, there's going to be no pidyon haben. Now we are moving over to category number two. And category number two is the revor. First, we are now talking about when we have a child that is going to be a bechor for the kohen. In other words, it's going to be the mother's peter rechem. In contrast, it's not going to be a bechor for nachala purposes. It's not going to be the father's reishis ono. He's already had a reishis ono, a child that he would mourn over. And accordingly, this is our category number two, a bechor for the kohen. There's going to be a required pidyon haben, but it's not going to be a bechor lenachala. The child will not receive a double portion of inheritance. So as follows, examples of this, we're going to have, I think it's seven examples of this. Mi shahayu lo banim v'nasa isha shelo yalda. First example is somebody who already has had a child. This is the most simple example of this. We have a man who already had children and he married a woman who had never given birth. So he already had his reishis ono from a prior wife, and his new wife, wife number two, never gave birth. Accordingly, if the first child they have is a baby boy, that is going to be the bechor lekohen. There's going to be a required pidyon haben again, because we look at the mother for purposes of the bechor lekohen, the pidyon haben. If it's her first peter rechem is a boy, there's a pidyon haben. However, on the other hand, because his father already had children, it's not going to be his bechor lenachala because he already had his reishis ono. And we are going to continue with examples in this category as well. If we have a woman nitgaira meuberes, this is a little bit complicated. She converted, literally she converted when she was pregnant already. It's not only that she converts, she converted along with her non-Jewish husband. So the conception of this baby that they are having was when they were both non-Jewish. And now they convert, and they converted when she was pregnant, and then she gives birth. So here we have the situation, she gives birth, it's her first child, it is her peter rechem. And accordingly, this child that is now Jewish is a bechor lekohen. There has to be a pidyon haben. However, it is not a bechor for purpose of nachala, because the conception was when the father was not Jewish. And the reason is when they convert, they lose their connection of father and son. Accordingly, because the conception was before and then they converted when she was pregnant, so after the conversion, it's not considered that the father is the father of that son. So the son would not receive a Yerusha, wouldn't receive any Yerusha, certainly not a double portion from that father. So that's why we have this situation here again. It's a Bechor Lekohen, there's a Pidyon Haben, because we look at her Peter Rechem, when she's Jewish, she gave birth. However, it's not a Bechor Nachala, because the conception was before the father was Jewish. And similarly, nishtachacha meuberes is the third example of this category. She, nishtachacha, she was set free. Now, she was a Canaanite slave. Her husband also was a Canaanite slave. They were both Canaanite slaves. They were set free. They became Jewish, but they were set free when she was meuberes, so that she was already expecting. So the same thing here, when she gives birth, her first child, if it's a baby boy, it's a Peter Rechem. Accordingly, there's going to be a required Pidyon Shvuim. This is a Bechor LeKohen. On the other hand, because the conception was before the husband was set free, there's going to be no Bechor LeNachala. The child will not receive a double portion. Fourth example. This is actually three examples together. This is four, five, and six. As follows. Yalda hi v'kohenes. One thing that we haven't mentioned before is that when we have, we talked about a pidyon haben that's required, that is only if the father and mother are both Yisraelim. However, if the father or mother is a Kohen or a Kohenes, or if the father or mother is a Levi or a Leviya, there would be no pidyon haben. So we have a situation here, this is our fourth example, Yalda hi v'kohenes, if she, the Yisraelite woman, she gave birth, and also a Kohenes gave birth, the mother is a Kohenes, and there would be no pidyon haben for the Kohenes' child. They both gave birth to baby boys, but they got mixed together, so they don't know whose son is whose. Accordingly, we have a situation here that a Pidyon HaBen is required, but we don't know to which of the children the Pidyon HaBen has to be done. So the father of the child that has to be, we know who the fathers are, we just don't know which their respective sons are. That's the problem. So the father who is required to do a Pidyon HaBen, that is the father who was married to the Yisraelite woman, and he's a Yisrael. He has to do a Pidyon HaBen, and he's effectively going to say, I'm going to be poda whichever son it is that is mine. So there is a required Pidyon HaBen. So this is a Bechor LeKohen. On the other hand, because we don't know which father relates to which son, so the son cannot get a Nachala. What would happen effectively is if the father passes away, if the Yisrael father passes away, and after the firstborn, we don't know which of those two sons is his son. Let's assume he had a number of other sons, and the father passes away, so there's a huge estate. The other sons that were born there afterward are going to say to both of the sons may try, the suspect sons, we don't know which one it is, may make a claim of Yerusha. All the other sons that we know who the father are, they're going to say, you're not a son. You're not a son. You're the son of the Kohenis. You're not the son of this father. You're the son of the other father. So because of that suffake here, we can that son, maybe he's a Bechor to this father, maybe he's not, but there's a concept, Hamosi Mechavero Alav Haraya, if you want to make a claim for money, you need to bring a proof, and he doesn't have a proof that this is his father. Maybe the other father is his father. Accordingly, we have a situation here of we have a Bechor LeKohen, there's going to be a required Pidyon HaBen, the father's going to have to redeem his son, he doesn't know which one it is, but he's still going to have to pay five sela to the Kohen. On the other hand, it's not a Bechor Nachala because this son cannot prove that he has that Yerusha coming to him. And the same as that situation, he Vilavia, if we have a mother and she gave birth to a son, and we have a Levia, the mother is a Levi, and she gave birth to her son, and they got mixed together. Same scenario, and the third example of that is he v'isha shekvar yalda. If we have a Yisraelite woman, and she gave birth to a son, and we have another woman, but the other woman, she's a Yisraelite, but she has already given birth, and they both have sons, and they got mixed together. So we don't know which son has to be redeemed. So the father of the son, that the woman who never has given birth, he has an obligation to redeem the son, apparently, but we don't know which son he has to redeem. So we have, again, a Bechor LeKohen, but we do not have a Bechor Nalachala, because if that son tries to make a claim for Yerusha, his other brothers that were born there afterward can say, you weren't born to our father, you were born to the other father, and you have no claim. Now we are going forward with the seventh example in this category. Again, the category we're talking about is a Bechor LeKohen, because we have a Keter Rechem of the mother, so there's a required Pidyon HaBen. On the other hand, it's not a Bechor Lenachala. So another example of that, V'chein, Mi Shloshasa Achar Bala Shlosha Chodashim V'niseis V'yalda. There's a halacha that a woman who was married, she got divorced, the husband passed away, she has to wait 3 months until she gets remarried to another man. Why is that? So we can know who the father is. For example, if she gives birth after the divorce, 7 months later, 8 months later, and let's say 9 months later, she gives birth. So we don't know. She gave birth 9 months later. We don't know if the father was the first husband who passed away, and that child went full term, 9 months, or maybe if she got married, let's say 2 months, instead of waiting the full 3 months, she got married 2 months thereafterward, maybe this is simply the child of the second husband, and it simply didn't go full term, it went only 7 months into the term, and we don't know who the father is. So the situation we're talking about is the mother, she did not wait the full 3 months, she should have. She waited, for example, 2 months, and accordingly, we don't know which is the father. And she gave birth, and we don't know here, is this child the child of the first husband, and it went full term for 9 months, or ben shiva la'achron, or maybe it's the child of the second husband, and it simply did not go full term. It went only 7 months into the term. So here we have a situation, we have a Bechor LeKohen, assuming that it is her full, assuming it's her first child, so it's her Peter Rechem. So there is a pidyon haben. However, there's going to be lo nachala, certainly not a double portion, but even a single portion coming to this child, because we don't know which is the proper father. We don't know which is the father to this child. Accordingly, he cannot make a claim of getting a Yerusha. So in all these situations, we're talking, this is a bechor l'koin, and there is not a bechor l'nachala as well. So continuing, category number three, Ezuhu bechor l'nachala u'lekoin. Where do we have a situation where we have a child, this is a firstborn, a bechor, and it is going to be a bechor for both purposes, for nachala, for getting a double portion from the father, because it's the reishi, so no, and also it's going to be the peter rechem of the mother, and accordingly there will be a pidyon haben. So the most obvious case is we have a father, he's Yisrael, a woman that's Yisrael, he's never had children, she's never had children, it's her peter rechem, that is going to be the situation. The Mishnah doesn't mention that because that's so obvious. Another situation that would be the same, hamapeles shapir malei dam, malei mayim, Malei Gnivinim. So the situation is as follows. She had a very early stage fetus. So early stage, it didn't even have the features of an animal, of a chaya. Enough, we mentioned that before, that that's the subject of machloket between Rabbi Meir and Chachamim. If that would take it out of being a keter rachem, we're not talking about, that would be late stage what we're talking about. It was so early stage, this fetus, that it came out and it was a shapkir. It was basically, it was a sack that was full of blood, or it was full of water, or it was full of ganinim, the bartanur being two different explanations. It was like material that was all colorful, or it looked like worms. It was simply full of stuff that you, it looked like cuts. It was all cut up and something of that nature. So it wasn't that we have a fetus here, an embryo that started forming and having features. That's not the situation. This was so early stage. Or continuing, we have a situation, hamapeles kamin dagim v'chagavim, Shkatzim v'ramasim, or we have a situation that she was a mapalat, she aborted, but so early stage, what came out, it looked like fish, or it looked like locusts, or it looked like shkatzim or ramasim, or various types of creatures, rodents, worms, snakes, insects, stuff like that. All of these are so early stage that we're talking about that they would not cause it to be a keter rechem of the mother. Because it's so early stage, we don't consider it a halachic opening of the womb. And accordingly, if there is a boy born there afterward, that would be the bechor, because that would be the peter rechem. And similarly, hamapeles yom arbaim, if she had her aborted whatever she was carrying so early on the 40th day or earlier for conception, so it was so earlier on that nothing really developed of significance, that is not going to be considered her peter rechem. And what is born thereafter, haba'achareim, whatever is born after all these situations that we just mentioned, because these events that happened, these aborting of such early stage fetuses, etc., because it was so soon after conception, whatever comes after, what's born afterward, and as long as it's a baby boy, haba acharein bechor lenachala ulekoin, will be a bechor for purposes of nachala, assuming that it's the firstborn of the father. That child will get a double portion from the father. It's the reishis ono of the father. Ulekoin, it's also going to be the bechor for the coin that a pidyon haben will be required, because this is considered the peter rechem of the mother. Mishnah Beis is a continuation of the prior Mishnah, and it's the category number four that we mentioned in the prior Mishnah, that we have a situation of a bechor that in fact is neither a bechor, not a bechor for purposes of nachala, getting a double inheritance from the father, and also not a bechor for a kohen for purposes of pidyon haben. And it goes as follows, the tests that we've been talking about throughout that first long Mishnah was for purposes of nachala, for purposes of inheritance. The bechor, the son, has to be the firstborn of the father, and it has to be the reishis ono, which means the first child that the father would mourn over. And for purposes of having of a bechor lekohen, to have a pidyon haben, that bechor has to be the peter rechem of the mother, the first opening of the womb of the mother. And what we're going to see in our situation in this Mishnah, Mishnah Beis, is how does that apply or does it not apply when we have two twins? All twins are two. So we have twins in utero. And the situation is that the first one was not born naturally. The first one was born via C-section. And the second one was born naturally. Are we going to have a Bechor or not going to have a Bechor? So Yotze Dofen Vaba Acharav. If we have that firstborn child, baby boy, but it was born through Yotze Dofen as a C-section, and the one thereafterward, Vaba Acharav, also is a son. The second one was born naturally. The Tana Kama says, Shnehem Einan Bechor Lo Nachalav Lo Lekohen. Neither of them are a Bechor for either purpose, not for double inheritance and not for a Pidyon HaBen. Why is that? So the Tana Kama steps out of our classic test. That will be Rabbi Shimon. We'll get back to our classic test of when we have a Bechor for Nachala Nekohen. But the Tana Kama is of the view that number one, who was born through a C-section, cannot be a Bechor, because the concept of being a Bechor applies only to a child that was born naturally, but not by a child that was born via C-section. So that first child, although born first because it was via C-section, cannot serve as a Bechor for either purpose. And number two, cannot be a Bechor because it wasn't a Bechor. It wasn't born first. It was born second. It was not the firstborn of the father for purposes of Nachala, for inheritance. And it was also not the firstborn of the mother. So it cannot be called a firstborn for either purpose. Rabbi Shimon Omer, and Rabbi Shimon is going to sound more familiar because he's going to stick with our classic test. Harishon Lenachala Vasheni Lechamesh Laim. The first one that was born via C-section is the Bechor for Nachala, even though that firstborn son was not born naturally, that was born via C-section, but that is still the reishis ono of the father. That's our test that we have seen up till date in this parak, is the firstborn son the reishis ono, regardless of how it was born, natural or C-section, as long as that's the first son that the father would mourn over, that's the reishis ono, that is going to be the bechor for nachala. So the first one, the C-section son, is going to be the Bechor Lenachala. And the second one is going to be the Bechor for the Kohen. That's why it says the Chamesh Slayim, that it has to be a redeemed Pidyon HaBen with five Slayim being paid to the Kohen. And the reason is because even though this is the second one being born, but it was born through a natural birth. That is the Pet Erechem. It was the second son born, but it was the first one born through a natural means, not through a C-section. It was born through a vaginal birth. So it's a Pet Erechem, and accordingly, although it's second, but it is the Bechor for purposes of Pidyon HaBen. Mishnah Gimel starts a set of four Mishnayas that we deal with situations of Suffolk, a doubt, if a given baby is a Bechor LeKohen or not, such that it would be obligated, or the father would be obligated, to do a Pidyon HaBen. In Mishnah Gimel, we're in fact going to have four different scenarios, starting as follows. Scenario number one, Mishalo Bikra Ishto. We have a man whose wife has still not given birth yet. So if she has a baby boy first, then it's going to be a Pidyon HaBen. V'yalda shnei zecharim, and instead of having just one baby boy, she had two baby boys, and the issue here is that they don't know which one was born first. Is it A or is it B? It does not matter, because one of them was born first, and there is an obligation of Pidyon HaBen, regardless of knowing if it's A or B as the Bechor. So the father is obligated, nosen chamesh la'im la'kohen, the father has to give five Slaim to the Kohen to redeem whichever of the sons is the Bechor. Situation number two, Meis Echad Mehen Besoch Shloshim Yom. If we had that situation that it was two twins, or twins that were born, they got mixed up, we don't know which is which, is it A is the Bechor or B is the Bechor, and one of them passed away within 30 days. 30 days is the mark that it is a viable child. So before that, one of them passed away, and we don't know. We know A passed away, but we don't know if A was the Bechor or not. So we don't know. One of them passed away. We don't know if the Bechor or the non-Bechor passed away. So in this situation, Ha'av Patur, the father, is not going to be obligated to do a Pidyon HaBen. The rationale is because even if the Kohen comes knocking, saying, you owe me money for the Pidyon HaBen, five Slaim, the father can say, prove it, that the one that is alive still is the Bechor. The Kohen will have no proof to that, and we say Hamotzi mechaveiro alav haraya, the burden of proof is on the Kohen. He doesn't have proof that it's the Bechor that is alive still, and accordingly the father has no obligation of paying the Kohen five Slaim. Next situation, situation number three. Again, we had those two twins that were born two boys, they got mixed up, but instead of the twins or one of them passing away, it's now the father who passed away before doing the pidyon haben. Meisa'av v'habanim kayamim, the father passed away, the children are still alive, Baruch Hashem. Rabbi Meir Omer, Rabbi Meir says we have to divide up. Is there going to be an obligation to do a pidyon haben or not? As follows, it's a little bit complicated. We have an estate. We have an estate of the father, that's the Yerusha that will be divided up between the sons. So the estate has an obligation to redeem one of the sons. That's the obligation to pay 5 shlaim to the Kohen. The Kohen has a lien on the estate. So Rabbi Meir Omer, im nasnu ach lo chalku, if one of the sons or the sons together went and paid the 5 shlaim to the Kohen before the estate was divided up, so the Kohen had a lien on that estate and the estate paid the 5 shlaim, accordingly, nasno. They gave it to the Kohen, and the Kohen keeps the money. So that was a payment for the lien. The Kohen had a right to that money because the estate had not been divided, and just as he had the lien, or the father had the obligation to pay when the father was alive, once the father passed away, the Kohen had the lien on the estate. Before the estate is divided up, he was paid, he keeps the money. However, Vimlav, however, if that's not the case, and that means that they divided up the estate to the two sons, let's say two sons or more sons, it doesn't really matter. In this situation, once they've divided up the estate between, let's just assume, two sons, Pturim, the sons are not going to have to pay. And what's going on here is once there's a division of the assets, the lien that the Kohen had on the estate goes away. The estate never, no longer exists as an estate. It's the personal property of the two separate sons. And even if the Kohen went knocking on A's door and says, pay me, A can say, Hamotzi mechaveiro alav araya, could very well be that it's B who is the Bechor. And if he goes knocks on B's door, B can say exactly the same thing. So that is the shita of the Tanakhama. Tanakhama is Rabbi Meir here, that if it's before the assets are divided, the Kohen keeps it. He got paid when it was still in estate, but once the assets have been divided up, the Kohen no longer can get paid. Rabbi Yehuda Omeri disagrees. Nitzchayvu nechasim. Even after the estate has been divided up, the Kohen still has a lien on the assets. He has a lien on the assets of the individual brothers, and accordingly, he can still obligate the payment of the 5 shlaim to him. So the lien continues. It doesn't go away once the estate is divided, and the Kohen indeed does get paid his 5 shlaim from that property. Next situation, number 4, if we have Zachar and Nekeva, back to our original situation that we have a woman, she never had a child, and she had twins. Instead of having 2 baby boys, she had 1 Zachar and 1 Nekeva, 1 boy, 1 girl, and again, they got mixed up, and we don't know if it was the boy that was born first. We have a Bechor situation, and the father has an obligation to redeem him from the Kohen. However, if it was the Nekeva, the woman, the baby girl, which was born first, then we have no Bechor situation, and the Kohen gets nothing. So even if the Kohen comes knocking on the door and says, pay me, the Kohen has no proof that it was the Zachar, the baby boy that was born first. Accordingly, Enkan the Kohen Klum, the Kohen gets nothing. Hamotzi Mechaveiro, Halav Arayan, the Kohen here has no proof that he's owned anything, because maybe it was a baby girl that was born first, and accordingly, the Kohen gets zero. Mishnah Dalet, and there were afterward, the next 2 Mishnayos as well, deal with situations where there are children, and they get mixed up. So Ta'arovis, they're mixed up, and we have questions, how much or does the Kohen have to get paid at all for a Pidyon HaBen? We're going to start out with Mishnah Dalet, and the situation here is that we have one husband who has 2 wives. We'll call them wife A and wife B, and we'll have actually 4 different scenarios, and even within the scenarios, we'll have different permutations in those scenarios. So Mishnah Dalet, first scenario is when we have Shtei Nashim Shel Abikro, we have that one husband, he has 2 wives, neither of them has ever had any children, V'yaldu Shnei Zacharim, and they each had a son. Wife A and wife B, each one has a son, but the problem is they got mixed up, so we don't know which mother goes to which son. But it really doesn't matter for purposes of the Pidyon HaBen, because the father has to redeem each of them anyway, even if we don't know which one goes to which mother. Nosen Eser Slaim, the Kohen has to give 10 Slaim, 5 for each one of them. to the Kohen. So that is the situation. Even though they got mixed up, it doesn't matter. It's as if they're not mixed up. He has an obligation. He has to redeem each of them because they're each Bechorim, and he has to give a total of 10 Tzlaim to the Kohen. Continuing in the same situation, Meis Echad, man, we had those two children, two baby boys, and we don't know which one goes to which mother, and one of them passes away. Meis Echad, man, Besoch Shloshim, within 30 days, so it's within the time period that there's only the obligation to pay at the end of 30 days for the child, because that's when the child is called viable, halachically viable. So one of them died, and we're talking about a situation where the coin paid first within the 30 days, and thereafter within the 30 days, one of the two sons passes away. He did a pidyon on each of them. One passes away, and now we're talking about a refund of the 5 sela for that child that the pidyon haben was paid for. So if that father, when he gave the 10 slaim, because he had to give for each of his sons, if he gave them that 10 slaim to the same kohen, that kohen is going to be obligated to refund 5 slaim for one of them, that one that passed away, that didn't reach 30 days, the father is going to get a refund for that. However, if the father paid 5 to each of 2 kohanim, so 5 to one and 5 to the other, in this situation, the father is not able to get any refund. Why is that? Because when he goes to the first kohen, that kohen is going to say that it was the other, you redeemed the son that was indeed alive still, that's still a bechor. And it must be that the other coin that you gave the 5 slaim to, that's the one that the child, the Bechor, passed away. So you have your refund coming from him. And when he goes to that second coin, he's going to basically say the exact same thing. Accordingly, effectively what we have here is Hamotzi Mechavero Alav Araya is being used against the father. The father has no proof that it's one coin or the other that owes him the money because these children got mixed together. And we didn't designate which of the Kohanim were being redeemed, was being paid for the redemption of which of the Bechorim. And accordingly, each of them can send them to the other one. And the father has no proof that either coin owes him the 5 slaim. Next scenario, scenario number 2. Again, we're starting out set one husband and 2 wives. He has 2 wives that give birth at approximately the same time. Neither of them had children before, but in this situation, instead of each of them having a baby boy, they have Zachar Unekeva. One has a baby boy, and one has a baby girl, or an Oshnei Zacharim Unekeva. And the same will be the situation if between the two of them, they had 2 baby boys and 1 baby girl, and we don't know the order. So in the situation that we have a Zachar Nekeva, we have those 2 mothers, neither of them ever gave birth. One has a baby boy, one has a baby girl. There's a Pidyon HaBen on one of them, there's a Bechor. And in the situation that we have 2 Zacharim and a Nekeva, certainly one of them had a baby boy. The other one had a baby boy and a girl. And the situation is we don't know which one came out first. It could be also that one of them had 2 baby boys and one had a baby girl. So the bottom line here is we only know for certain that there is one Bechor that has to be redeemed because the other wife could have given birth to a Nekeva first or only. And accordingly, in both of these situations, no saying Chamesh Lain Lekohen, because there's only one certain Bechor, that is the one that has to be redeemed for the situation that we don't have a certainty that we have a Bechor. Maybe there was a Bechor, maybe there was a baby girl that was born instead. Then we would say to the coin, you have nothing coming to you for the second one because Amotzi Mechaveiro Alav Haraya, the coin has no proof that the second woman, the second wife, gave birth to baby boy. Maybe it was a baby girl. Okay, continuing in the situation that we have 2 wives from the same husband and neither of them had given birth before and now they gave birth to Shtei Nekevos V'Zachar. They gave birth between the two of them and there was a mixture up again. They got mixed up so we don't know which of the wives gave birth to what. But between the two of those wives, they gave birth to 2 baby girls and a baby boy. So in this situation, it could very well be that each of them gave birth to a baby girl first, and then one of them gave birth to a baby boy thereafter. That could be the situation, which means that there may be no Bechor here, and accordingly, the coin has nothing coming to him because the coin has no proof that there was a Bechor, that a baby boy was born first. Or the same situation, we have again one husband, two wives, neither had given birth before, and what they gave birth to between the two of them that got mixed together, or Shnei Zacharim Shtei Nekevos, between the two of them, they had four children all at one time. Each had twins. Each had, we don't know what came from what. So it could very well be that each of them gave birth to an akeva, a baby girl first. So the Kohen will have no proof that there was a bechor that was born here, that a baby boy was born first. Accordingly, again, ain kan the Kohen klum. In this situation, the Kohen has nothing coming to him because he has no proof that there was a bechor. Situation, scenario number three, same husband, one husband, and he has two wives. But in this time, we're changing a fact. It's not neither of them had given birth before, but achas bichra, the achas shelo bichra. We have one of the wives that had never given birth, and one had given birth before. So that second one, even if she has a baby boy, it's not going to be a bechor. V'yaldu shnei zacharim, and between the two of them, they had two zacharim, two baby boys, and they got mixed together. Again, it doesn't matter for our purposes, for the pidyon haben, they got mixed together, because the father is going to be obligated to redeem one, the bechor, the baby boy, and not the baby girl. Accordingly, no sen chamesh laim, the kohen, he has to give chamesh slaim to the kohen. Here, let me just clarify that. We have one bichra v'chat shelo bichra. And they gave birth to shnei zacharim. We had one had given birth, one had not given birth. They gave birth to two zacharim between the two of them. So one of them is, even though they got mixed together, one of them is going to be a bechor, the one that hadn't given birth before. Accordingly, no sin chamesh lemil kohen, because there's certainly a bechor here, even though they got mixed together. Building on that situation, meis echad man betoch shloshim yom. We had those two baby boys that were born. One was a bechor, one is not a bechor. They got mixed together, and one of them died within 30 days, and we don't know, is it the bechor or not the bechor? So in this situation, ha'av patur, because it could have been the bechor, when the kohen comes knocking on the door, the father can say, I think it was the bechor that passed away, and accordingly, you have nothing coming to you. Hamoti mechavero ala varai, you have no proof that it wasn't the bechor that died. So indeed, my claim, says the father, is that it was the bechor that died. And accordingly, the kohen has nothing coming to him. Meis ha'av abanim kayami. Now we're changing a little bit. Same scenario, we had those two mothers that one had given birth before, one had not given birth before, and they had two zacharim between the two, they got mixed together. And Mesav, and here before the redemption, or after redemption, we'll see, the father passes away, v'habanim kayamim, and the two children are alive. Rabbi Meir Omer, im nasnu ad shlochalku nasnu, if there was a payment from the estate, so the father passed away, he left the Yerusha to his two sons, and there was a payment to the Kohen before the estate was divided up, according to Rabbi Meir, then that is the payment. That is the redemption for the Bechor that was required to be paid. The Imlav Pturim, however, if there was not a payment from the estate before it was divided already, then there is no required payment for the Pinyon Haben. And what's going on here, according to Rabbi Meir, is when it's an estate, the Kohen has a claim. Effectively, he has a security interest. He has a lien against the property of the Yerusha from the father, and there's an obligation to pay. But once that Yerusha is divided up, then there is no longer a claim by the Kohen against the estate. The estate has been divided, and if he goes to one of the children, he can say, I wasn't the Bechor. It was my brother, my half-brother that was a Bechor. And if he goes to that one, he can say, you have no proof, it was the other one. And accordingly, because the Kohen has no proof, which is the real Bechor, Hamoti Mechaveiro, Alav Haraya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Nischaivu Nechasim. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. He says, even if the estate was already divided up, the Kohen still has a claim. His claim, when there was a Yerusha together against the state, was the claim on the assets. And if the assets have been divided, he still has a claim against the assets. Accordingly, he would get paid five slaim by the two brothers, even though the assets had been divided up. And last scenario, again, we are building on achas bichra v'achas loch bichra. We have the husband, he has two wives. One of them had a bechor before and had given birth before, and one had not. And now between the two of them that got mixed up, one, there's a zachar and a keva, there's a baby boy and a baby girl. We don't know which one gave birth to which. So accordingly, it could be that it's the one who had not given birth had the baby girl, and accordingly, ein kan l'kohen klum, because the kohen has no proof that it was the wife who had not given birth had the baby boy. That would be a bechor, but because the kohen has no proof, it could very well be that the one who already gave birth had the baby boy, and the other one who had never given birth had the baby girl. The kohen has no proof. Hamotzei mechaveiro alav haraya, there is no raya, and accordingly, the Kohen will receive nothing. Mishnah Hay is going to sound somewhat similar to Mishnah Dalet that we just saw, at least the first half of Mishnah Dalet, but one major change here. We are dealing with two husbands, not one husband. We are dealing with two husbands in the situation. Mishnah Hay, Shtei Nashim, Shal Shnei Anashim. We have two wives of two husbands, Shelo Bikru, and neither of these wives have given birth yet. In fact, just to foreshadow, Mishnah Vav, the next Mishnah will be like the Seifa, the second part of Mishnah Dalet, where we have two husbands and they have two wives, one had given birth and one had not given birth. So that's going to be like the second part of Mishnah Dalet. Mishnah Hay here is going to be like the first part of Mishnah Dalet, that we have situation where it's different. It's two husbands, not one husband, and they're married to two separate wives. They nashim shal shnei, nashim shal abikru, but neither of the wives had ever given birth, and again, the children are going to get mixed together. They're going to give birth approximately at the same time, and there's going to be a tarovis such that we don't know which mother goes to which child. Accordingly, we don't know which father goes to which child. V'yaldu shnei zecharim, and both of those wives, they gave birth to two baby boys. Ish is a bechor. So accordingly, even though you know which father goes to which child, but nonetheless, each father is still obligated to redeem his child. Accordingly, Zenos and Chamesh Laim Lekoin, Vezenos and Chamesh Laim Lekoin, both Father A and Father B have an obligation to be Poda, their children, their Bechor. Each one has a respective obligation, so each one has to give five slayim to the coin of his choice. Meis achad mehem betoch shloshim yom. How about if one of those baby boys that got mixed together died within 30 days? Im lekoin echad nasnu. If the two of them, they gave together, they gave to the same kohen, so the kohen received 10 slayim, then in that situation, yachsi lehen chamesh slayim. The kohen is going to be obligated to give a refund of 5 slayim to the two of them, to the two fathers. They'll split it between the two of them, 2.5 and 2.5. Now, what's interesting here, and this is pointed out in the Gemara, what's going on, the Bartanur brings it as well, is we would have thought to say that in the situation that one of the sons passes away and the father goes to Korea, there are two fathers, and we don't know who was really the father of this son that passed away. So if father number one goes to the kohen and says, give me a refund, the kohen can say, I think the one that passed away is the son of the other father. And father number two comes to the kohen and says, give me a refund, he can say, I think the father is father number one, and it's not you. I don't owe you anything. Hamotzi mechaveiro alav haraya. So the Gemara points out here that we're talking about a situation that the two fathers signed a deal together. One authorized the other to go to the kohen. And because of that, because effectively one is representing the other, it's one claim against the kohen, he can't say go to the other father, because the other father is here as well. They are jointly represented. Accordingly, that's why the kohen would have to give a refund upon request. Oh, im lishnei kohenim nanu. On this situation, same situation that we had, that we have two of the sons, they got mixed together. One passes away within 30 days. They had paid the kohanim, but what's different here is that each of the fathers paid different kohanim. Im lishnei kohanim nasnu, einam yicholim lotzi miadam. In this situation, you cannot get a refund. Why is that? Because the father who paid kohen A, kohen one, will go to him and he'll say, I don't think that it was your son that passed away, it's the other person. And the other father will go to the other kohen, and that kohen will say, Amoti mechavelo avra raya, I think it was the son that passed away of the other father, not yours. And accordingly, because there is no proof by the father, either of the fathers, that it was their child that passed away, neither of them are able to collect from their respective kohanim to get a refund on the 5 slime. Same fact scenario that we had those two husbands and we have the two wives, and neither of them had given birth before. But in this situation, instead of giving birth to two baby boys that got mixed together, they gave birth to Zachar Unikeva. One gave birth to baby boy, one gave birth to baby girl. We don't know which mother gave birth to which, and accordingly, we don't know which father is obligated in the Pidyon HaBen. One is obligated in the Pidyon HaBen, but only one of them, not both of them. So ha'avos p'turim. In this situation, the avos, the fathers, are going to be putter from Pidyon HaBen. Why? Because if the kohen comes and knocks and says you have to redeem your son with five slaim, each of them can say, I don't think I had the zachar, I don't think I had the baby boy, I had the baby girl, and you have to go to the other father. And that father can say the same. The kohen has no proof against either one of them. Hamotzi mechaveiro alav araya, the kohen has no proof, and accordingly, neither of the fathers would be obligated to pay the kohen five slaim. However, because the son is a vadai, we know that that son is a bechor, we simply didn't know which father is associated with that son, that ben chai of liftos etzasmo, that son is going to be obligated to redeem himself from the kohen. Just changing a little bit of a fact here, we're still in the same situation. We have the two husbands and we have the two wives, and neither of them have given birth before, and we have a mixture of their children. But what did they give birth to? Shteina kevos v'zachar, if they gave birth between the two wives to two baby girls and a zachar and a baby boy. So here it could be that each of them first gave birth to a baby girl, and then one gave birth to a baby boy, which means there's no bechor situation, so the kohen, even if he came and knocked and trying to collect, each of the fathers could say, my wife gave birth to a baby girl, there's no bechor, I don't owe you anything. Oh, shnei zacharim shteina kevos, the same situation would be between those two wives, if they gave birth to four children, two baby boys and two baby girls, it could be that each did give birth to zacharim, baby boys first, and they're bechorim, but also it could be that each of them gave birth to baby girls first, and there are no bechorim, and there's no payment to the kohen. In this situation, again, ein kan the kohen kum, the kohen has nothing coming to him, because hamotzi mechaveiro alav haraya, the kohen has no proof that either or both women gave birth to a baby boy. He has no proof. It could be that it was a baby, each gave birth to a baby girl, and the kohen, he has no proof, he would receive, again, nothing. Mishnah Vav, at least the beginning of Mishnah Vav, is a continuation of the prior Mishnah with one important change. Again, we have two husbands, each has a wife, and they each give birth to babies. But the difference here is Achas Bichra, Ba'achas Shelo Bichra. We have one of them that has never given birth before, so if she has a baby boy, that will be the Bechor. But the other one has already given birth, so even if she has a baby boy, it will not be a Bechor. Shel Shnei Anashim, as we mentioned, is from two husbands. So we have two husbands. Each has his own respective wife. One has given birth before, one has not. V'yaldu Shnei Zacharim, and they gave birth to two baby boys, Mazel Tov and Mazel Pol Tov. The problem is that they got mixed up. It's a tarovis, a mixture. We don't know who is the mother, who is the father of each of the respective children. Zeshelo Bikra Ishto Nosen Chamesh Laim Lakoin. This one, this father, he was married to the wife that had never given birth before, so he knows that he has to do a Pidyon HaBen, even though he doesn't know which is his son. Accordingly, he is obligated to do the Pidyon HaBen, give the five Slaim to the Kohen. Now to change the fact scenario a little bit, again, we have the two husbands, each has his own respective wife. One had never given birth, one had given birth, but instead of two baby boys, Zachar Nekeva, they have a baby boy and a baby girl. They don't know whose is who. So as the mixture is, you know which is the boy, you know which is the girl, but you don't know who is the mother, who is the father, who are the respective parents of each of the babies. In this situation, because it could be that the woman who had already given birth gave birth now to the baby boy, which means that the one who had never given birth gave birth to the baby girl, she can't be a bechor. It has to be that you gave birth to a boy to have a bechor. Accordingly, in this situation, enkan lekohen klum, the kohen gets nothing. You would have to bring a proof that he is owed money, and the proof would have to be that it was the baby boy that was born to the woman who had never given birth. He does not have that proof. Accordingly, the kohen is left with nothing. Now we are transitioning to another part of the Mishnah that is not talking about a suffek bechor. Is somebody a bechor? Is somebody not a bechor? But we're talking about a vadai bechor. Certainly a situation of bechor. This child is a bechor. We know that. And it goes as follows. Meis haben besoch shloshim yom. If we had this baby boy, the baby boy is a bechor, and the father passes away within 30 days of the birth. And as we've discussed, the pidyon haben is committed to, is required to be paid from the 30th day, not before the 30th day. So if we have meis haben betoch shloshim yom, this baby passes away before the 30th day, so they're never triggered in the obligation to redeem that baby because he passed away before the obligatory day, the day that we're obligated to pay to be podeh, came along. So even though the father prepaid before the 30th day, the kohen would have to return the money because he's only owed the money from the 30th day, not before. So if the child is no longer extant, passed away before the 30th day, the kohen has to give a refund. La'achar shloshim yom. However, if the child passes away after the 30th day, so the day of payment, the obligation to pay, comes on the 30th day, and the child passed away thereafter, afal pi shelo nas, and even if that father had not paid, so you're on the 35th day, 36th day, anytime after the 30th day, he still hasn't paid, but he's now obligated to pay, even if the son passes away, yitan, he has to be quoted that child, because the money is owed. Once the day passes, the money is owed, he is obligated, even if the son passes away thereafterward. Meis biyom shloshim. Now we have a situation, not that the child passed away before the 30th day, that he doesn't have to pay or he gets a refund, or after the 30th day, that he has to pay even if he hasn't paid yet, but the child passed away on the 30th day. So the Tana Kama says, Kayom Shalafanav, that is like the day before, that's like the 29th or the 28th or the 27th, which means that if the child didn't pass through the 30th day, get to the end of the 30th day, but he passed away on the 30th day, there is going to have to be a refund. If the father already paid, there's going to be a refund to the father from the Kohen. And if the father didn't pay yet, he's not going to have to pay. Continuing, Rabbi Akiva disagrees with that. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Im Nasan Lo Yito, Vim Lo Nasan Lo Yiten. Rabbi Akiva has a suffix. The obligation to do the Pidyon Ben, is it on the 30th day or the 31st day? That's the suffix. Accordingly, because we have the suffix, if the child passes away on the 30th day, that's the day that we have a doubt about. Rabbi Akiva says, Im Nasan, if the father had already paid, Lo Yito, he cannot get the money back because we say, Amotzi Mechaviro, Alav Haraya, we're going to go by who has the money, Vim Lo Nasan. And again, if the father has not paid in this situation, the same thing is going to apply. If he hasn't paid, Lo Yito, and he's not going to have to pay, because now we have this day, the 30th day is the suffix, and the obligation would be on the Kohen to being proof that he is owed, and we have a suffix. We don't know 30th day, how are we going to treat it, like before 30 or after 30. Accordingly, whoever has the money on the 30th day, the money is going to stay with that person. Continuing again, it's not that the child passed away, but meis ha'av b'toch shloshim yom, if it's the father that passed away within 30 days, so the 30th day hasn't come yet. So the question now is not, do you have to redeem the son or not? The son hits the 30th day, you have to redeem him, but the father's not there, and we have a question, how do we know that he didn't pay already? So if it's before the 30th day, becheskat shelo nifta, the chazaka is, the default is, that he has not paid yet, because typically people won't prepay when they have an obligation that's going to kick in on the 30th day. So the presumption is going to be that the father has not paid until ad shiyavi ra'aya shenifta, until the son is going to have to bring a proof that he was already redeemed. And what this means is that the father has the obligation. If the father passes away before the 30th day of the Pidyon HaBen, then that obligation is going to revert to the son. So the son would have to redeem himself. And if the son doesn't have a proof that his father paid, then the son is going to have to pay. But if he does have a proof that his father paid early, then the son is not going to have to redeem himself. La'achar shloshim yom. Again, we're talking about when the father passed away, and he passed away after 30 days. So the presumption here is the reverse. Once you get 30th day, that's the obligation to pay. We presume that the father paid. So becheskat shenifta, and there are actually two ways to read the balance of this Mishnah. There are two different girsas. The first one is becheskat shenifta. There's a chazaka that the son was redeemed by the father because the father passed away after 30 days. Ad sheyomru lo shelo nifta, until they say to him that he was not redeemed. What is this talking about? So based on the first girsa, that is the girsa, Rashi explains as follows, that if the father said on his deathbed, I did not redeem my son, so the presumption is the son has been redeemed unless they tell him, unless they tell the son. So ad sheyomru lo shenivta, until they tell the son he was not redeemed, because the father said he was not redeemed, then the son is going to have to pay for the pinyon on the ben, even though it's after the 30th day. The father passed away after the 30th day. That will rebut the presumption that the father paid. The other nusach is ad sheyavira ayasha lo nifta. This is talking about the Kohen, that there's a presumption that the Kohen was paid after the 30th day. Father passed away after 30, you presume he paid, unless ad sheyavira ayasha lo nifta. This is another girsa brought by others, yeah, the Tosfos Yontif, etc. So until the Kohen brings a proof that he did not receive the money from the father. So two different ways to read that last line in the Mishnah. Continuing, an interesting situation, and it's actually fairly complicated. It's going to sound simple, but then we'll see that the Gemara is saying it's not so simple. So if we have a situation that we have a father and a son to redeem, neither have been redeemed, who comes first? For example, if the father only has 5 slayim, so he can only redeem one of them, who's going to be first? So who liftos, ubino liftos, he has to redeem himself or his child. Who kodem es bino, he's going to come first before his son. If you have an obligation, it would be mitzvah didei adif, the mitzvah on yourself is preferred, so you'd redeem yourself first. Even though you don't have the ability to redeem the son, you'll take care of that in the future. Rabbi Yehuda Omer bino kodmo, he disagrees. The son is going to be first. Why is that? Shemitzvah so'al avi, because when it comes to the father, the father isn't the person who's primarily obligated to redeem himself, but rather it was his father that dropped the ball and didn't redeem him. Shemitzvah so ala avi, the mitzvah of this father was on his father was supposed to redeem him. He didn't do it. However, mitzvah bino alav, however, when it comes to this father, his primary obligation is to redeem his son. So accordingly, if he has a choice between redeeming himself and redeeming his son, his primary obligation is going to be to redeem his son. Now, the Gemara, and this is brought by the Bar Tanura, that this is not exactly what's going on here, because if everyone would agree, both the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yehuda would agree, that if the father only has 5 slaim, and this is the language of the Bar Tanura, hu kodem espino, it's going to be the father before the son. If he only has enough money to redeem one of them, father comes first before the son. Why? The mitzvah didei adif, because the mitzvah for him is going to come first. If you have a mitzvah for you and to do it to somebody else, you're going to come first. The machlokas here, and this is when we get a little bit complicated, is the father has only 5 slayim in cash, in hand, and what he has is another value worth of 5 slayim worth of property that he has sold. He sold, for example, before the son was 30 days old, before the son's obligation kicked in. So he had these assets, and he received those assets from his own father as a Yerusha. So we have 3 levels, 3 generations, the grandfather, the father and son, and we're talking about who should this father, not the grandfather, but the father, redeem himself or his son. So if he has only 5 slayim, everyone would agree he redeems himself first and not his son. The machlokas here in this Mishnah is where the father has 5 slayim in hand, and he has another 5 slayim worth of property that he received from his father, but he subsequently sold, but before the son hit 30 days old. And what's going to happen in this situation? So the machlokas here between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yehuda is based on the following phrase, and this is how the Gemara explains it. When you have a milva haksuva b'torah, if you have an obligation that is written in the Torah, literally a loan that's written in the Torah, and that would be the pidyon haben that somebody has to do to his son, is it as if it's written in a shtar or not? Is as if you're really committed to it, as if you've written it, you have a written obligation to do it or not. So the father here has an obligation. So his father, we'll start with the grandfather. The grandfather was obligated to redeem his son, who's the father of the son. You know, we have 3 generations. So the grandfather was supposed to redeem his son, and he didn't do it. But he had property, and the son received that as a Yerusha. And eventually it was that property that was sold to somebody, and that's the property that we're talking about that's worth 5 slayim. Can the Kohen go and collect from that property? So Rabbi Yehuda is of the view that yes, the Kohen can go and collect from that property, because that's a milva ksuva b'torah, that grandfather was obligated to redeem his son. There's a pinyon ben obligation, and it's if that there was a shtar written, it's if there was a shtar written for that, that the kohen has the ability now to go and collect from that property. So the end of the day, Rabbi Yehuda is of the view that this, when this kohen has five sla'im in cash, he's going to use that to redeem his son, and then he's going to tell the kohen, for my redemption, go and collect it from the property, because it was my father's obligation to redeem me. He didn't do it, but there's that property that I sold, and you can collect the five slime for my redemption from that property. And that's what Rabbi Yehuda says in the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Benokodma, first you're going to use the five slime that you have in cash to redeem your son, and with the other, the property that was sold that has worth the five slime, Shemitzvah Sol Aviv, that was my father's obligation to redeem me. So you can go collect from that, and mitzvahs b'no alav, I have to pay for my son, the five sela, but you can go collect from the property. On the other hand, the Tanakhama is of the view, that's Hachamim, that the milva haksuva b'torah ain't a ketetuba shtar. You have this milva the ksuva torah, which means the obligation to do a pidyon ben. That's not as if it is written in a shtar. If it's not written in a shtar, that means that you cannot go, the coin cannot go and collect from an innocent purchaser that property. That property is out of bounds. The coin cannot go collect it. And accordingly, because there's only five slime in cash with the father here, he can redeem himself or his son, but he cannot go. He can't tell the coin, go collect over there, because it's not considered as if it was bishtar that was written in writing. Accordingly, we revert to, if you have a choice between yourself and your son with these five slime in hand, the mitzvah based on the Tanakhama Chachamim would be who kodem esveno, the father is going to come before the son, use the five slime to redeem himself, and in the future, if the father has the money to redeem his son, or the son is going to be obligated to redeem himself. Mishnah Zayin discusses the currency that the Pidyon HaBen had to be paid in. So just a little bit of background before we get into the text of the Mishnah, we're going to not only talk about the currency of the Pidyon HaBen, but also various payments in the Torah as well. So there's a pasuk in Bamidbar, Perak Yud Ches, pasuk Tetzayin, that says when you do the Pidyon HaBen, it has to be paid to the kohen with chameshet shkalim b'shekel HaKodesh. Five shekel, five shkalim, in the denomination of the Shekel HaKodesh. So we're going to discuss in our Mishnah what that means, because in the time of the Mishnah, which is what we're talking about here, there were actually two currencies, two types of currencies that were used. And the first one was based on the coins that were issued by the kingdom, the Malchus of Tsur, that is Tyre, and those were coins that were made of pure silver. And that's referred to as Kesef Tzori, literally the silver of Tzor, which is Tyre, so that it was one currency that was in use in the land of Israel at the time of the Mishnah. And the other type was called Kesef Medina. We could call that more domestic, local coinage. And what that was a part of it was silver, one part silver, and seven parts were made of copper. So that's going to be a lesser coin. It's not going to have the same value as the first type, the Kesef Tzori. So the Mishnah tells us as follows, Chamesh Shlaim Shel Ben B'manet Tzori. The five Shlaim, that's meant to be the five Shkalim that are talked about in our Mishnah, the five Shekel, five Shkalim. And throughout the Mishnah, it's referred to as the five slaim. That's the same thing. But what it tells us is that it has to be paid in the manet suri, which is the more expensive currency. Those are the pure silver coins. So it would be five pure silver coins of the size that were used at the time in the Mishnah of the Kesef Tzori. In addition, it's not only that payment that has to be in the currency of Tzor, but also shloshim shelevet, the 30 shkalim that is talked about in the Torah, where an ox kills somebody's Eved Kenani. So that owner of that ox that is responsible for the death of that Eved Kenani, that Canaanite slave that was owned by a Jew, is going to have to pay, and the Torah says 30 shkalim have to be paid. So that again is going to be in the currency of Tzor. And in addition, v'chamishim shel ones v'shel mefate, as discussed in the Torah, somebody who is me'anes, who violates against her will, a na'ara, which is a Jewish girl between the ages of 12 and 12 and a half, or is mefate her, that is seduces her, has to pay 50 shekel, 50 pieces of silver, and that is going to be in the currency of Tzor as well. And another example, Umeya Shel Motzi Shemra, if there is a husband that makes a claim, a false claim, against his wife that she committed adultery against him between the Kiddushin and the Nisuin. So between when they became betrothed and the actual chuppah together, he says that she committed adultery and it turns out to be false. He's going to have to pay 100 pieces of silver. Again, that's going to be in the currency of Tzor. And Kulan B'Shekel HaKodesh B'Manet Tzori. All those, that's what we've been saying. All these are going to have to be paid in the Shekel HaKodesh, as is discussed in the Torah. What does that mean? That's going to be B'Manet Tzori. That is going to be in the currency that we discussed. That was the pure silver coins of Tzor. And now we're going to add on an additional concept. Kulam Niftin B'Kesef U'V'Shava Kesef. As the Bartanur saying explains, we're not talking about what we just mentioned in the Mishnah. He says, Kol HaNiftin, anything that is redeemed under halacha, for example, a Bechor Adam, that's the Pidyon HaBen. When you redeem a baby child, the Pidyon HaBen, you pay the Kohen the money, or Hekdesh, if you donated something to the Beis HaMikdash and you want to redeem it from the Beis HaMikdash, all of these can be paid in actual coins, that's the Kesef, and not only in the coins itself, U'Beshavah Kesef, in addition, objects worth money. So you can go and you can take a valuable chair or your diamond ring or whatever it may be, as long as it's the proper value. These items that are poded, that these items that can be redeemed, for example, what we're talking about in this parak, the Bechor Adam, the Pidyon HaBen, it doesn't have to be in the actual money itself, it has to be in the money, or it can be objects worth money in the value of those, when it comes to Pidyon HaBen, the five Slayim. With the exception of Chutz Min HaShkalim, when it happens to do with the annual donation of the Shkalim, the Machatzis HaShekel, that each Jew would give, each male would give, as discussed in the Masechet Shkalim, those would have to be the actual coins themselves, the Machatzis HaShekel, that you cannot give in Shavu Kesef, but otherwise, the Gemara actually gives another couple of examples of items that has to be in the actual coinage, and not the Shavu Kesef, not objects, but in any case, the concept here is, the default would be, typically when you need to redeem something, it can be money or Shavu Kesef, but there are certain exceptions. The one listed in our Mishnah is giving your Machatzis HaShekel. Mishnah Ches builds on the concept that we just saw, that when it comes to the Pidyon HaBen can be B'Kesef, you can pay it in money, that's the five Slayim, or you can pay it also in Shavu Kesef, which are objects equal to the five Slayim. Our Mishnah is going to tell us there are actually four exceptions to that, things that we would have thought you can pay because they do have value, but it cannot be used, even though typically you could pay with Shavu Kesef. It doesn't have to be the actual coins, but you can pay, give an item worth in value to five Slayim. But here are the exceptions. Ein Kodim Lo Ba'avadim, you cannot do the Pinyon HaBen with an Eved, to go with your Eved, with your slave, and redeem your child by giving that Eved to the coin in lieu of the five Slayim. That doesn't work. For Lobishtaros, if you have an IOU from somebody, so somebody gave the father of the child that has to do the Pidyon HaBen, he has an IOU from somebody worth five Slayim, that's the value that he has to use in order to redeem his child. He cannot use that star, that IOU, that promissory note, give that to the coin. For example, he has a check that was written out by somebody to him for five Slayim, he can't simply say, pay to the order of, let me pay over this check to the coin, that's not going to work. Veloba karkos, you also can't do a Pidyon HaBen with land, with real property. Veloba hekdeshos, also not with hekdesh, something that has been consecrated, dedicated to the Beis HaMikdash. This is all based on limudim and sukim, so there are different limudim in the Gemara for these four exceptions that cannot be used for a Pidyon HaBen. Continuing, even if the person talking about this IOU that you had from somebody else, a promissory note, how about giving your own promissory note to the Kohen? So actually on a deraisa level, that would be effective. For example, that the father writes to the Kohen, I owe you five Slayim for the Pinyon HaBen. On a deraisa, on a biblical level, that would be effective. But the concern is it's not effective when you give the actual IOU. What is effective is when you actually pay the five slayim that are recorded in the IOU. So you give the IOU, that's not going to work. You actually have to pay the money. But Chazal were concerned. If people see that you are giving over this IOU, they're going to think that the Pidyon HaBen is accomplished via the shtar, via the document, via the IOU, via the promissory note, and that's not the case. They're going to forget that you actually have to pay. It's only on payment that it's effective. Accordingly, Chazal decreed on a rabbinic level that we cannot use an IOU, a promissory note for a Pidyon HaBen. Even if you pay there afterward, it doesn't matter. That is not going to be effective because of their concern. Accordingly, the Mishnah says as follows, Kasav l'kohen shuchayav l'chamesh la'im. Somebody wrote to the Kohen, I owe you a promissory note. I owe you five slayim. Chayav liteno, because he made this commitment, he wrote it, I'm going to pay you five slayim. He is now obligated, legally, halachically obligated to pay because he made that commitment. I owe you five slayim, pay up. However, Chazal instituted, as we mentioned, ubino eino padoy. This is not going to be an effective method to do the Pidyon HaBen because of the concern that people are going to forget to actually make the payment. So you gave the IOU, you better pay up. Lefichach, however, accordingly, you have to make a second payment. We have to have just the payment of five slayim independent of the first payment of five slayim that we're making good on that promissory note. Accordingly, because you have to give the second payment now of five slayim, on that second payment, imratza hakoin liten lo matana rashai, if the coin wants to give back that second payment, he is permitted to give that second payment. If he doesn't want to give it back, he doesn't have to give it back, but that means the father is going to be paying 10 slayim, five to make good on the IU, and another five to pay for the actual Pidyon HaBen. If the coin wants to give back the second payment, he's welcome to, but he is not required to do so. And continuing a last statement in the Mishnah, Matrish Pidyon Benova Avad, if somebody separated the five slayim that he's going to pay the coin, he designated it, he separated it, I have it ready to go, and it got lost. So is he going to still have to pay the Kohen or not because he already separated it? Will that be effective enough? So the Mishnah says it's not going to be effective until you actually pay the Kohen. Chaya ba'achrayu. So he is responsible for it. He has achrayus on it. And that means that he has to make sure that it is given to the Kohen. It's not enough that he designated it, separated it. It got lost, so he has to make sure that the coin is actually paid. And where do we learn that from? It's a pasuk she'ne'emar, as it says in Bamibar Yudches, Yelecha, it shall be yours. Now this pasuk is being spoken to Aaron, a coin. The money should be yours, and thereafter it says, Pado tiften. The limud is as follows. It's only once the money is yours, it's only once the Pidyon HaBen money is received by you, the Kohen, that it's going to be effective, an effective redemption, an effective Pidyon HaBen. But until the money is received by the Kohen, it's not going to be effective. Accordingly, even if somebody separates it, has it ready to go, but it gets lost before being given to the Kohen, that is not going to be an effective Pidyon HaBen. Mishnah Tes discusses some of the fundamentals of when we have a Bechor receives a double portion in the Yerusha. So this Mishnah is going to go through what does the Bechor receive a double portion of and what is excluded. Certain assets the Bechor will not get a double portion of. There are a lot of limudim, emsukim, etc. that back up the statements in this Mishnah. We're not going to go through the limudim. We'll stick with the pshat of the Mishnah itself. So just on a high level, when we say that a Bechor gets a double portion, this would be an example. If we have four brothers, and there's a Bechor, the oldest brother, so typically if we're not going to have a Pishnaim, we would say each one gets 25%. But the way the Bechor's preference work in getting a double is instead of dividing the estate, the assets of the estate into four, we're going to divide it into five. And the Bechor is going to get two of the portions, so he's going to get two-fifths of it, and each of the other brothers is going to receive one-fifth. So that's how the double portion of the Bechor works. So the Mishnah says as follows, HaBechor notel bishnayim b'nichsei ha'av. The Bechor receives a double portion in the assets of his father when the father passes away and there's a distribution. in the estate, the Bechor will receive a double portion. On the other hand, we're going to see now three carve-outs that the Bechor would not receive a double portion on. Ve'eno notel pishnayim b'nichsei ha'em. He will not receive a double portion when his mother passes away. The mother may have certain assets that are not going to be part of the father's estate, her own personal assets. So when she passes away, the Bechor is not going to get a double portion in those. Those will be split equally amongst all the brothers. So each will receive 25% in our example of four brothers, because the Bechor is not going to get a double portion. And an additional two carve-outs that a Bechor is not going to receive a double portion from, ve'eno notel pishnayim bashevach. He's not going to receive a double portion on the shevach, means the increase in value. And this is talking about if there's an increase in value in the estate assets. So for example, if the estate has stock in Apple Computer and there's an increase in valuation between when the father passes away and when there is the actual distribution, the division of the assets between the brothers, the Bechor will not receive the increase in that value. And the way it's going to work is as follows. You will divide up the assets in five, but one of the two portions that the Bechor will receive, they're going to have to make an analysis. What was the value at the time the father passed away? What's the value now when there's the distribution of the assets? And that increase in value, that Bechor is going to have to refund back to his brother, such that he's not going to benefit from the increase in the value. So that is the next carve-out. And the last carve-out is v'lo b'ra'ui kivimuchzak. If there's certain assets that are not yet in the estate, but they are ra'ui, they are potential assets. So it's not that they are in the estate right now, that would be muhsak. Muhsak means they are in the estate, they're in possession right now, but they're ra'oi, they are potential assets. The Bechor would not get a double portion of that. An example would be if the father who passed away gave a loan to somebody during his life, and that borrower has those assets right now, the father passes away, those assets that have to be repaid are ra'oi. Those are potential assets, those are not muhsak assets, those are not in possession right now. Accordingly, when those assets are paid back, because they're paid back after the death of the father, the Bechor will not receive a double portion of those. Those are ra'oi, they are not muhsak. Another example would be a lottery ticket. If the father bought a lottery ticket and before there was a drawing on the lottery, he passes away, so there afterward is the drawing, the father won. That would not be an asset of the estate at the time the father passed away. And accordingly, that's just ra'oi, it's not muhsak, so the brother, the Bechor, would not receive a double portion of that. Now, we've been talked about these last two carve-outs here, the shevach, the increase in value, and also something that is ra'oi, not muhsak, something that is a potential asset, but not an asset in this estate right now, that a Bechor does not receive a double portion of it. It's not only the Bechor, there are actually another three people then that will not participate, will not be able to receive assets from shevach and assets that are ra'oi, potential assets. V'lo ha'isha b'ksubasa. The first of those is a woman to get paid on her ktuba. She has a set amount that she has to be paid out on her ksuba when she continues living after her husband passes away. And if there is a limit in the assets, some of the assets she would look for to get paid from is shevach, that increase in value, or that ra'oi asset, but not muhsak, she would not be able to collect from those. And similarly, v'lo habonos b'mizonoseyan. There are girls that until they reach a certain age, until they reach the age of 12 and a half years old, or until they get engaged, there's a commitment by the husband in the ksuba of his wife that they will be supported after he passes away. So if the father passes away, the banos, his daughters, will receive mizonos, support payments. Those support payments cannot be taken from either the shevach or the assets that are ra'oi. And the rationale for that is because they can only take as much as their mother in the ksuba is able to get, because the whole reason they're getting paid is it's a t'nai ksuba. It's a commitment that the father made after he passes away, they will get their mizonos. So that commitment's not going to be any stronger than the wife, what she would receive in her ksuba payment. And if she cannot receive in her ksuba payment, the shevach or the assets that are ro'oi, the banos, the daughters also cannot receive their mizonos payments from those assets as well. And in addition, v'lo hayabam, there's a halacha that when somebody does yibum to the wife of his brother who passed away, so brother A passes away, he has all these assets, brother B does yibum to the wife of brother A, that brother B will receive all of those assets as a Yerusha. He's going to get the entire estate of brother A because he is marrying the wife of, he's doing Yibum to the wife of brother A. So he's going to get all the assets, but when he receives that those assets, he would not receive the Shavach, the increase in value between when his brother passed away and when there is the division of those assets, the distribution to him of the assets. And also he would not receive any assets that are potential assets as long as they're not Muchzak, he would not receive those as well. And now the Mishnah basically repeats what we've said, and we'll see shortly that it's actually adding a couple points. The Chula and all of these that we mentioned, all of these people that we mentioned, the Bechor and the mother getting her Ksubas, the wife getting her Ksuba, and the Bonos and the daughters getting the Mizonos, and the Yabam, the Chulam, Einotli Meshevach, they do not receive the increase, the Shevach, increase in value after the death of Loboroi, Kibosim, Muchsak, and also they will not get potential assets. So what is this coming down? Because we said this already, so we'll just look quickly in the Bar Tanura, we'll just see a couple snippets. V'kulan Einotli Meshevach, Hadar Tanile, this is a repetition, La'atuye Shvach de Memele, to include that even if the Shevach, the increase in the assets, happened without the father being involved at all, meaning they went up by themselves, there was no human involvement in increasing the assets, no work done by the father, so we would have thought maybe that they could be able to collect from the increase in the assets increased. If they had an interest in the assets and the increase went up by themselves, they should be able to collect from them. This is coming to teach us that still all of these aforementioned people would not collect from the Shevach, even if they went up, even if the assets went up in value by themselves, like a Sadak. There was no involvement, it went up by itself, or he had an orchard and there were no fruits, there were just buds on it, and now there are fruits. It doesn't matter that increased in value happened by itself, they would still not be able to participate in the Shevach. And why does it repeat, v'lo b'ra'oi k'memuchzak, and none of these will be able to receive assets that are only potential assets, not in possession? So says the Bar Tanura, lo b'ra'oi k'memuchzak, that tui is coming to include a situation, im haya avi aviyam, the grandfather, meaning the father who passed away, his father, chai b'shas misas aviyam, he was still alive. The father's father was still alive at the time when the father passed away. And we know that that grandfather has assets that when he passes away, his grandchildren will definitively, it's not a suffix, it's not simply a potential asset that maybe they'll receive the Yerusha, they will definitely receive that Yerusha from their grandfather when the grandfather passes away. So maybe we would consider that muchzak, because it's a definitive issue. It's definitively going to be received. It's not just a possibility that this asset will receive. So maybe we'll consider muchzak, and these aforementioned people can participate in that Yerusha that will be received as well. The Mishnah is coming to teach us, no, even though it's definitively that Yerusha will be received when that grandfather passes away, it doesn't matter. It's still considered ro'oi. It's still considered a potential asset that none of the aforementioned people would be able to participate and receive that asset as well. Mishnah Yud is going to leverage a number of concepts that we just saw in the prior Mishnah, but we're going to apply them in a different context. And the context is Yovel. Yovel is the 50th year of the Shemitah cycle. So every seventh year is the year of the Shemitah. And after seven cycles of Shemitah, we have the 50th year, which is the Yovel year. And there's a special halacha brought in the Torah that says it applies to the Yovel year, that all land purchases, people who purchased land over the ensuing 49 years, they are going to go back to the original seller, or if that seller is not alive, it's going to go back to the family members of that seller. So that's a special halacha when it comes to Yovel. Now, if there's a purchase, be it 49 years ago, 2 years ago, 27 years ago, it's during this Yovel cycle of 50 years, comes the beginning of the Yovel year, those purchases will be unwound and the purchaser will have to return to the seller or the seller's family that property that was purchased. What our Mishnah is going to focus on is the exceptions to the rule. Those transfers of land, I'm not going to call it purchases because purchases do go back, but those other types of transfers of land that happened in the ensuing 49 years that will not go back on the Yovel. Elu she'enan chozrim b'Yovel, these are the transfers of property that do not go back on the Yovel. And the first one is the subject of our perek, the Bechor, HaBechorah. If we have that firstborn male boy, brother, who gets an additional portion, that additional portion is not going to go back and be reallocated to his other brothers. So when they received the Yerusha, as we've been talking about, the brothers will divide the land, but the Bechor will get an extra portion as if he is two brothers together. But that additional portion that he received, it's not going to be that we're going to view him as a purchaser. That is, he has to return his second portion and have it reallocated between him and his brothers. This is a permanent thing that he's receiving, not only one portion, but two portions, and it will survive the Yovel as well. Number two, v'hayoresh et ishto, if we have a man who he received the Yerusha from his wife, he will keep that permanently. It's not going to go back to her family when the Yovel comes. And number three, v'hayim yabem et eshes achiv, as discussed in the prior Mishnah, somebody who does yibum to the wife of his brother who passed away. So brother number one passes away, brother number two does yibum to brother number one's wife, he receives all the Yerusha of that brother. That Yerusha will not go back and be reallocated to others come the Yovel year. That second brother is going to receive and keep that land permanently, and it will go through the Yovel. It will not be returned on the Yovel. And number four, v'hamatana divrei Rebbe Meir, the matana, if A gives B a gift, a present, that also will not go back. So Rebbe Meir is not looking at a present as a purchase. A purchase goes back with the Yovel. However, a gift to somebody will not go back with the Yovel. On the other hand, v'chachamim omri matana kemecher, chachamim agree with the first three, but the fourth one, when it comes to giving a present to someone, they view the giving of a present as a sale, and accordingly, just like a sale goes back with the Yovel year, so to a gift will be returned to the donor or the donor's family come that Yovel year will be returned. Number three, opinion number three, the first opinion, Tanakama. Opinion number two, Chachamim, disagreeing only on the Matana. And number three, opinion number three, is Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Kulan Chozdim B'Yovel. Everything mentioned before, all the four different variables that the Tanakama said, the second portion of the Bechor, and somebody who is Yoresh is Ishto, and somebody who does Yubum to his brother's wife, and somebody who gives the Matana, receives the Matana, all of them, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Kulan Chozdim B'Yovel, all of those, just like purchases are unraveled, so too come the Yovel year, all those four also will be unraveled. Rabbi Yochanan ben Morocco Omer Hayoresh et Ishto Yachzir l'bnei Mishpacha. We'll read it literally, and then we're going to have to explain what it's really going on here. So it says literally, if somebody receives a Yerusha from his wife, he has to return it back to her family. V'inake lehem min adamim, and he's going to give a deduction from the cost. He's going to deduct from the purchase price. What is going on here? So we're going to read in the Bar Tanura, based on a Gemara, Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka Svirulei. Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka is of the view that the Yerusha that a Baal, that a husband receives from his wife, is a Deoraisa. That's a Deen Deoraisa. It's a Machlok. Is it Derabanan? Is it Deoraisa? But in any case, Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka is of the view that it is Deoraisa. So what are we talking about here? That it's going to go back. If it's a Deoraisa, the husband keeps it, what would ever go back? So he goes on to explain that Chazal instituted that if a man would receive as part of Yerusha a plot, a basic forest, it's basically her family cemetery plot, and that is designated for her family, that's where her family members are buried. In that situation, if he would receive that in the Yerusha, it's going out of their family, that would be a pekah mishpacha, that would be disgraceful to their family, that a different family now is in possession and in use of their plot, of their cemetery, of their personal family cemetery. Accordingly, although Midin Doraisa, the husband, does own the cemetery of her family, but Chazal instituted that it will be returned. He has to return it to her family, and they have to pay him. They have to pay him the value for the property, but they get it back. So that's what it says. Accordingly, if a person is Yoresh, a Yoresh, and Isha is talking specifically about the cemetery plot of her family, she was in possession of it, She owned it legally, but she passed away. The husband received it as Yerusha. He has to return it rabbinically to her family. However, V'yanakel hamin adamim, he has to give void. They take a discount on the price. What's that that's talking about is the plot that his wife would be buried in, because he halachically is responsible to supply her burial plot. Accordingly, he can't charge them for it when they are paying him for the entire cemetery. So they're going to take a deduction. They're going to receive a deduction. They're going to take a deduction on the amount that would be allocated to her plot, the area that she, his wife, would be buried in, because that's his responsibility, not their responsibility.